We're going to turn to winners and losers and highs and lows of the year as we get to our annual political awards. And before we get back to our panel, let's hear from the man and the woman on the street on their choice of who topped their political charts and who hit the bum notes.
Which politician impressed you this year?
Any politician, not our favourite people. I thought Alan Kelly, the former Labour leader, he was involved in the Vicky Phelan's story. I thought he did very well. We have Michael Healy Ray in our constituency, so he's the best.
I wouldn't be keen on what Eamon Ryan is doing to Dublin at the moment with the city. I just think it's a shambles, isn't it?
Do you have any political standout moments this year?
That Prime Minister debacle. She had not a clue.
She
didn't have a clue.
Having moved back to Ireland, the Irish landscape is just, it's very pleasant after having experienced the UK for the last few years.
Zelensky, I suppose, in Ukraine would stand out as he's the Time magazine person of the year, so you can understand that.
I like Mary Lou because I think she's a straight talker.
All right, and our thanks to Ellen Leonard who was out asking Christmas shoppers on Henry Street who their politician of the year is and getting quite an international flavour as she did so. So let's go to political moment of the year first. Louise, we'll go first to you. What was your top political moment?
I think, you mentioned Zelensky there. I thought Zelensky addressing the door was a really, really poignant moment. And it was one of those moments in Leinster House where everyone was so delighted to be there. And I think it was a day that everyone will remember. But my top political moment, and Alan Kelly was mentioned there, I think it was the ousting of Alan Kelly as Labour leader. It was one of probably the most dramatic kind of weeks in Leinster House. It was a lot of rumour, a lot of speculation. I understand that
best kept secret nearly, wasn't it?
Well, I understand that day there was journalists. Now, I wasn't personally there, but that there was journalists chasing press handlers and staff and TDs and senators down the hallways to try and find out what was happening to Alan. And it was just, I mean, and I don't mean it's in a cruel way, but it was one of the most dramatic days there, you know, the plinth where he came out and he announced he was resigning, the rumours why he was going, the fact that Labour had moved in the polls, his whole parliamentary party had around him on the plinth who had basically just signed his death warrant, you know, putting on a united front. It was one of those moments that I think everyone still talks about in Leinster House that night.
Right, Harry, Philip, not the first time the Labour Party has panicked about the polls.
I think every party has... Yeah, it was. I was surprised that he didn't take a stand. He went quite meekly in the end. It wasn't very Alan Kelly like the infamous.
The magazine in the AK-47 was empty.
Monikered. Yeah. I thought there was something about it that wasn't quite. I thought there was some inequity and some unfairness there. It was shrouded in so much secrecy. There were secret meetings in somebody's house that they all denied afterwards. But I mean, he was taken out. I mean, it was a silent assassination.
Well, I think we can hear that in the manner in which he acknowledged it was time to go.
I was advised by my parliamentary colleagues on Tuesday morning that they had lost collective confidence in my leadership. This was a surprise to me, but I accepted the decision immediately. Becoming leader of the Labour Party was the best political day of my life. I was very humbled and overwhelmed by the support I got.
Philip, you can hear the emotion.
It's emotional, yeah. I think the Labour Party just ran away with themselves when they saw the vote that Ivana Bashik got in Dublin Bay South, essentially. They thought, oh my God, this is the Messiah. The Labour Party are back. It's going to be like the Gilmore wave again. And look, it just hasn't taken off. It really, nothing has changed since Alan Kelly left. It's not the party hasn't improved. Its output, it hasn't improved in the polls. You don't see them on TV as much. Like, Alan Kelly was and is a kind of a political figure in Irish politics. He's larger than life. He's able to control he's very good in debates in the Dáil. He has a way of getting into issues, and he's a way of, I was always very impressed with him, that if there was an issue, like with cervical check or with other things that were going on, he would always get himself into that, and he would kind of tie in with the people involved.
He was dogged, wasn't he?
He was.
He was. He would always. He used to always say to me, "I know I shouldn't be speaking to him like he's gone, but like he'd always say, I'm the best political journalist in this country."
But he was. Like he would go and he would expose
I'm
things.
Doing
and
your
he
job
would,
for you. He
but
would
he would
say.
Find things and like his parliamentary questions, everything spectacular. Like.
Okay. Yeah, he was taken out very early. I mean, he never really got to have an electoral test. Mm. I think there might have been a little bit precipitous in taking him away.
Well, going back to our Vox Pop at the start, we did hear the mention of one rural independent. Jennifer, they caught your eye for a political moment of the year.
Yeah, the time when the three independent TDs came down en masse to the AIB headquarters. Now, whether it was a case the decision was already taken or they were just scared of going down and meeting them, so they reversed their decision on removing cash from a number of branches. But for people who are outside of Dublin, people who don't engage with online banking and everything, it is something that it's very annoying that people are seeing their local branches being threatened with closure. And a lot of people like to give out about politicians just sitting there giving out. But these were three guys who just got up and walked down and demanded things were to change.
A political stick up.
Absolutely. And some other journalists were mistakenly, jokingly calling the AIB headquarters Nakatomi Plaza.
Right. Anybody else? That wasn't Louise. I saw you laughing. It was almost a moment you forgot.
I'd actually completely forgotten about it. There was a clip of the three lads walking down Molesworth Street towards AIB. And I mean, I don't know if they were responsible for solving the issue. I think the issue had already been in train, but they claimed it. God love them. They did claim it. And it got the job done.
Right, Harry, as they walked down Molesworth Street, did you hear a little green bag playing in the background as they strode along?
Not quite, but it does show that sometimes the medium can be the message, and even by kind of generating a bit of publicity, like they did, you can put some pressure on AIB. And they were part, they might not have been the people who kind of forced AIB into an embarrassing retreat, but I'm sure they played their part in it as well.
And there's a legacy as well, because it looks like there will be legislation brought forward to ensure that there's basic banking services kept in different areas. So, you know, if you're looking at a moment that has repercussions down the road, you know, that would be one of them.
The man who saved cash, Philip.
Yeah, look, it's easy kind of sometimes up here, us D4 media types, even though everybody's not from D4, is that you forget about some of these rural issues and some of the issues that are happening in your... like however many towns around the country and those little things and it's bit by bit, they lose their post office, they lose their Garda station, they lose their bank, and then there's nothing left, you know? So like
that's why we have lecture in law at Southeast Technological University,
Jennifer. Absolutely, not D4.
And by the way, Jennifer, seeing as you are in the Southeast and Alan Kelly covers that area, what was your take on his resignation, particularly I suppose in light of what we heard recently after Vicky Phelan's passing, where Alan Kelly featured prominently? Is he missed in that neck of the woods?
He certainly is missed. And one of the things talking to Labour people, they will say that he never really got a chance to get off the ground, because when he went into the leadership position, there was the COVID-19 pandemic, which we are all hoping is absolutely well behind us now at this stage. And he never really got a chance to get started. And there is a lot of sympathy for him. And I don't see this being the end of his political career. And he is very vocal for issues, especially for issues in Tipperary. But I wouldn't say he's a done deal yet. I'd say there's more to come from Alan Kelly.
All right. Well, let's go for another resignation, Philip. That was one of your moments. Robert Troy.
Yeah, this was a big one. This was a really interesting political controversy or scandal, or I'm not sure where it sits on that spectrum. But it was the typical, and it happens with every one of these controversies that ends up leading to a minister or someone stepping away from their position, is that it's the drip feed. It's always the drip feed of information. It's always the stories that keep coming out. There's always the whoever's involved doesn't give the full picture on day one. And that's exactly what happened with Robert Troy, that the questions just keep piling up. They kept piling up. He wasn't being 100% transparent with his declarations about his many, many properties, about his various business interests, and about all these things that he had. And he just didn't get it out there on day one. He tried at one stage. He put out a statement listing a lot of things, but then there was more questions about what he spoke about in the Dáil, about his views on the HAP payment, which is paid to landlords. And eventually he put out, he had to step away, but he didn't do it quietly. He put out a resignation letter, which pretty much, what was the classic line? That was something like, I won't apologise for being a landlord. And I wasn't born with a silver spoon. Well,
let's actually hear his plea before the Court of Public Opinion as featured on RT's News at One.
I'm guilty that I didn't give the process the due diligence that it deserved. And as a consequence of that, I didn't fully account for my interests.
So you didn't read the document before you signed it, is that right?
I didn't give it the due diligence that it deserves.
Harry.
Yeah, I mean, there's a more onerous standard for politicians than for anybody else. And it's, you know, the old saying that justice must not only be done, but be seen to be done. And I think politicians need not only to be clean, but they need to be seen to be clean. And he wasn't. He didn't. He didn't declare, as Philip said, he wasn't transparent. And then when it emerged, he was very fitful in terms of the information he got out. So you saw this kind of drip feed, as Philip was saying, followed by what might be described as a feeding frenzy by the piranhas of the press. And suddenly Robert Troy was on a downward spiral or a downward tailspin from which he couldn't recover. And it's a pattern that we've seen so many times before in politics. And I mean, when he looks, he might feel a bit embittered about it. But at the end of the day, the only person that Robert Troy can blame is himself. These things have to be done. And if they're not done, you're going to end up in the soup.
Louise.
I think especially when it comes to something like housing and something like landlords, which people already, like, they already have issues with housing and landlords anyway. So this is kind of the perfect storm. I think Philip's right. I think that statement that was released, it was extraordinary. And he was saying, you know, I left school and I started working straight away and I bought my first house when I was 20. And I think a lot of people were going, well, I left school and I started working when the minute I left school and I didn't buy my first house when I was 20. So I think
one of his many houses. Yeah. Who has more than one house?
Yeah, well, this is the other thing.
Well, and I bought a few hotels, but unfortunately I had to give them all back at the end of Game of Monopoly.
No, and I do think the drip feed of information, it makes it so much worse. And I think perhaps he would have survived it if he'd have just come out and he said, right, I'm sorry, I didn't fill out the form right. I know it's important. I own XYZ, but that's not what happened. And it came to the point, I think he had to go. Or else he would have been pushed that bit further.
Harry, we're going to go to you next, and I suppose this is nearly a category of its own. For services rendered to a favourable contrast with Irish politics, Liz Truss and her resignation.
Yeah, are you going to play a clip or are you going to let me...
Well, yeah, let's hear from the lady herself at the end and then we'll work backwards for there in a sort of a reverse Benjamin Button style narrative.
Oh, thank you very much.
I came into office at a time of great economic and international instability. I was elected by the Conservative Party with a mandate to change this. We delivered on energy bills and on cutting national insurance. I recognise, though, given the situation, I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
I was elected by the Conservative Party, a group of people once described by David Cameron as the swivel-eyed loons. And then she met the markets.
Yeah, she took her resignation speech from the Robert Troy School of Resignation Rhetoric. She was defiant and unapologetic, but she had a lot to apologise for. The last 3 days of her term in particular were just a car crash playing out in slow motion. And I went over actually for a week to cover the succession race, which Rishi Sunak won. We have another word for it over here, but they described the whole debacle as a psychodrama. I think omni shambles, and there's another word as well, which I won't repeat on radio, that is sometimes used to describe such situations.
25 to 11. Yeah.
But it was a complete and utter mess. She was completely... She was way over her level. She didn't have the wherewithal, didn't have the authority, didn't have the smarts, didn't have the vision to be Prime Minister. And the only reason she was elected as Prime Minister is because there's this recalcitrant group of backwoodsmen, mainly men, Tories, who believe in a Britain and in an England in particular, a little England, that disappeared from the earth over 50 years ago. And she was kind of the last representative of them. And hopefully we have a more sensible Conservative government in place at the moment, because it's very important for us. They're our biggest trading neighbours, they're our closest neighbours. And there's also the question of the EU and Brexit and, of course, the Northern Protocol to be decided. And even though Rishi Sunak has kind of had a more pleasant and a more kind of reasonable demeanour since becoming Prime Minister, we've seen very little progress, actually, when it comes to the protocol since then. So hopefully they will be a little bit more moderate than their predecessors.
Jennifer, just as people are beginning to enjoy the psychodrama, or insert whatever word you prefer here, people have to pull themselves back because what happens in Britain happens to Ireland.
Yeah, the old saying that when England sneezes, Ireland gets the flu. Honestly, Liz Truss probably only lasted as long as she did because the Queen died in the middle of her her premiership. If the Queen hadn't died, instead of just an iceberg lettuce, she probably wouldn't have lasted as long as an avocado. But look, it was just absolute chaos, because even just doing my homework for this, the amount of things I had to go back and check, because so many of us were just taken up in a drama that could have been scripted by the makers of The Thick of It that was going on over in the UK. It was just chaos.
Speaking of which, chaos is one thing people experienced at the passport office for quite a bit of the summer. And that was one, Louise, that you picked. I suppose, will we hear the clip?
Well, let's hear the clip.
Fear Zimmer Higgins claiming credit for a clearing up of a misunderstanding about how the passport titles its various services.
Hi, I am really pleased to say that following months long of campaigning and all of the media attention today, that I'm post contacting me earlier to confirm that they are indeed going to change the name Passport Express to show that it's not the quickest way of getting your passport.
Coming as I do after a number of years on RT's Foreign Desk, I have to ask this question. Who is Emer Higgins and why did she say that?
So Emer Higgins is a Fine Gael backbench TD. And basically what happened here was there was absolute pandemonium in the passport office. There was huge, huge backlogs, huge delays, people trying to get passports, and especially children's passports. And Deputy Higgins, what her main issue was, is that Passport Express, which is the service that Unpost run, that was actually taking longer than it would if you went directly to the passport office and you applied for your passport. So Emer Higgins took it upon herself that Passport Express wasn't a very genuine name, it wasn't correct, so that she wanted the name to be changed. And in fairness to her, she did it. But
you have to take the wins where you can get them.
You have to take the wins where you can get them, but God love her. And she handled it with grace. She became a walking meme. There was a lot of memes. I actually think she might have had to turn the replies on her tweet of that video off. But it was just one of those moments where people, I think people were so annoyed about the passports that this just really didn't help. And it was just one of those moments that people, they really enjoyed it.
Emer's meme has since been deleted, Philip.
Is it gone? Is it?
I think it is gone. We certainly had grave difficulty tracking down the audio of that track.
It's not on
tonight.
Her LinkedIn profile. I am the woman who got the express knocked off the passport. No, it's a funny one. It was a good one to pick because it's one of those ones that, because you know it's somewhere within politics, people were sitting down going, "That's a great idea, Emer. Let's do a video, and we'll put it up on Twitter, and we'll celebrate." And you've really achieved something here today. So, I'd love to be in the room for some of those meetings.
Snatching something from the jaws of something we just don't quite know what.